Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Looking for the good, intentionally trying to find the positive in everything we do, because what you seek, you shall find. Where you put the majority of your attention will yield the biggest returns. Could it be that easy, positive or negative, you can control the yield? So take a moment to think about your day, week, or month. What are you pursuing? Where's your focus? Are you being intentional, seeking the good and inviting in the positive, or just getting lost in the chaos? Collectively, we can either drown in the negative, spewing our own buckets of hate, or we can rise above and intentionally pursue the good. Ready for a relentless pursuit of the positive? Do you know the only way to get rid of darkness is to add light? Darkness is the absence of light, so to change it in any other way simply doesn't work. Sometimes we can get so focused on the darkness in our lives, bumping around, hitting wall after wall, blaming and shaming, pursuing things we cannot change. We focus on what went wrong with our lives as a justification to staying stuck where we are, chastising ourselves for poor choices and the lack of knowledge. In the dark. So much of what we obsess about is out of our control, but we can't seem to accept and forgive ourselves. Forgiving ourselves would mean granting ourselves freedom to move on and step into the light, but then what? What would happen with all that stuff? The stuff we feel responsible for, burdened by, even plagued. Should we carry this around as evidence we're not good enough? Whoa, heavy stuff, but that's just it. Darkness is dark. Nothing about it feels good or seems healing. What if we take a step into the light? A little bit here and a little bit there to start illuminating the good in our lives. Not just the good we possess, but the goodness of opportunities to come. Staying in the darkness and wrestling with our past regrets keeps us blind to possibility. So let's take this opportunity to feel around for the light and give ourselves the permission to walk on. Is it that easy? Of course not. But being willing to explore a new way is the first step and the only way to get rid of the darkness and add the light. DePiro shares how to light up your life, five ways to make your path brighter. She's an author, blogger, and designer who lives in Washington, D.C. She launched PositivelyPresent.com in 2009 with the intention of sharing her insights about living a positive and present life, something that didn't always come easy to her. Here are her thoughts. This morning, I was walking down the same path I'd walked down the night before, and it suddenly dawned on me how different my thoughts were in the daylight. Last night, I'd been walking down the brick path late at night, and I'd been slightly scared, walking fast, clutching my keys, and occasionally looking over my shoulder. But when I ventured down the same path this morning, I was walking leisurely, strolling along and not once considering looking behind me. It dawned on me that that's the difference between night and day, between darkness and light. This is something that's probably happened to all of us at some point. We've walked somewhere at night and felt entirely different than when we walked down the same path during the day. It's amazing what a little light, a little change of perspective, a little more ability to see where we're going can do. To me, this is a great example of how our minds, coupled with external conditions, can transform the world. The path I was walking down was the exact same path. Same bricks, same bushes, same distance from the road to the door. Nothing bad had changed overnight. Yet now, in the morning light, I was seeing it differently. And seeing this path differently made me think about the way I see my life differently too. When I realized what a difference the daylight made in my perception of the path, I really got to thinking about my own internal day and night, the light and dark within my own mind. As I left the path and entered my building, my mind was flooded with questions. What if we applied this light and dark to the paths of our lives? What if we realized, really understood, that we could be walking down the same path and see it entirely different? What if we realized that we actually have the ability to transform the blackness into light? To transform a situation with the light we shed on it? Of course, these are not novel ideas. People have known well forever that the way we think about things, how much metaphorical darkness or lightness we give to a situation, impacts the world around us. Our minds are powerful, powerful things, and can truly alter our worlds with our thoughts. We have the ability to distort, both in negative and positive ways. And more importantly, we can control how we distort them. We have the ability to cast more light or more darkness on the situation. For example, when walking alone at night, I can frighten myself terribly when I start thinking of all the dangerous things that could happen or revisiting terrifying situations I've heard about. When walking alone on a beautiful fall day, the sun shining brightly overhead, I can convince myself that I don't have a care in the world. Even, I might have been having a bad day. For just a few moments, the warm sunshine pouring down on me can transform my mood because it causes me to think of summer, warmth, and happiness. My mind takes what it sees out in the world and transforms it, labeling it, giving it good or bad. When I thought about how much my mind has the ability to transform the world around me, I began thinking about how I could increase the light in my life. I then realized that when walking at night, I could have brought a flashlight with me, lighting up the path before me. If it was within my control, I could install lighting alongside the path, creating it a well-lit walk. And these ideas tie in perfectly with what I'm always thinking about, being a positive and present person, both in the literal and figurative sense. It takes work, energy, and effort to have a path that's bathed in light. But as anyone who has walked down a well-lit path wrapped in a feeling of safety knows, it's worth the effort if you're able to walk down that path unafraid. If you're anything like me, you want to walk down your path unafraid every time. You want to walk the roads and the paths that are well-lit. You want to see clearly and not be scared, always feeling safe. So, how do you do that in a figurative sense? How do you make the path for your life lit up, inspiring contentment and drowning out fear, while at the same time finding a balance between the darkness and the light? As we all know, you cannot live in a bright, blinding light forever. I mean, light is wonderful. It helps us see and helps us thrive and grow. But without darkness, we would be in a lot of trouble. We need the darkness as well as the light. We need a path that is lit the way many streets are. The light and dark are intertwined, allowing us to see without brightening the world to an unnatural state. We need both the light and the dark in our lives, but there are ways we can make our paths brighter, ways that we can make the road we're traveling down just a little bit more clear. So, here are the 5 best ways to shed some light on that path of yours. Bring your own source of light. As I've already mentioned, if you're going to be heading down a dark path, how about bring a flashlight? What does this mean figuratively? Well, it means you have to create light where there's darkness. When you're faced with a difficult situation, find a way to shed light on it. Look at it from a new angle. Shine a bright light into the darkest corners and look deep within yourself for a positive perspective. You don't have to wait around for someone to turn a light on or rescue you from the darkness. In fact, more often than not, light isn't just going to beam down on you for no reason at all. If you're on a dark path, you have to create light. Or better yet, you have to be the light. Don't wait for it. Be it. Surround yourself with others. Ever notice how a dark path isn't nearly as scary when you're with other people? Walking down a dark road alone can be scary, but it's a lot less terrifying when you're surrounded with other people. Life's kind of like that too. It can be scary and overwhelming at times, but when you're surrounding yourself with people, especially positive, supportive people, the dark road before you can seem much brighter, a little easier to bear. Surrounding yourself with a great support system will help make even the most dimly lit path seem safe enough to walk down. Choose your route carefully. It would be nice if we could always walk in sunshine, but we know that's not the case. We will all have to walk in the dark sometimes, stumbling and unsure of where we're headed. But don't look down or give up. Instead, look around you and see if this really is the best path to be on. Sometimes all it takes is opening your eyes and looking around to see that nearby is another brighter path, a path that would be much safer to venture down. Occasionally, we're forced in one direction, but more often than not, we have a choice. We can choose the path we want to go down. We can look for the brightest path, and if we don't see a bright path, we can make our own paths. Imagine the best possible scenario. You're probably familiar with the law of attraction, and though I won't go into the details here, I find the concept fascinating. I really do believe that we can attract things with our thoughts. Have you ever tried it? Visualizing. If you think the path you're on is going to get darker and darker, it will. So, imagine the best. Imagine the sky lightening, the sun peeking out of the clouds. Imagine bumping into a friendly group of people along your path. Don't think of all the negative things that could happen. Or guess what? You'll attract them. Instead, think of the wonderful things you'll encounter on your journey, and you will encounter them. But be prepared for the dark spots. Even with all your positive thinking and imagining the best, sometimes things don't go as well as planned. Sometimes the batteries in your flashlight die. Sometimes all your friends have to head down a different path and you're on your own again. Don't despair. Instead, be prepared. If possible, it's ideal to have some self-defense skills under your belt. This works in a figurative situation too. If you can prepare yourself by strengthening your skills, you'll be more likely to travel safely down your path. Not sure what to work on? I'd suggest confidence. I've read that the more confident you look, the less likely you are to get attacked. Have you heard that? Same thing goes for life. Be confident, believe in yourself, and you're a lot less likely to be brought down by others. Life is filled with light and dark, perfectly lit paths and dark winding roads. We're all aware of the good and the bad, but we don't always remember that we can make the most of the darkness. And in fact, we can even make the darkest times brighter if we choose to take action. And awesomely enough, we also have the opportunity to shed light on the paths of others. Give some thought on how you can brighten your path and how you can give others a bit of that bright light too. Thank you, Danny, for the reminder to share. Self-discovery and personal development is definitely by you, for you. But the end goal is to share your experiences with others. We're all learning and growing, and blogs and podcasts and videos are great, but our best teachers are each other. So when you find your light, be a city on a hill, one that can be seen by everyone, a beacon to follow when others have lost their way. Don't you love when you hear golden nuggets of inspiration that take root and you're able to apply them throughout your life in so many ways? Well, that happened to me several weeks ago, and I just had to share. I was listening to a horse trainer give his story, and in it came an important revelation. He was talking about working with a new horse. Now, this wouldn't be a typical trail horse, but a horse that works a ranch. One required to be part of a team and perform critical duties for his rider. So you can imagine synergy and trust and respect would be crucial here. The trainer talked about two ways you can get to that point. You could pull back, kick, spur, and shout, overcorrecting his every move until he does what you want? Or you could be patient, ride it out until he does something just right, and then celebrate this achievement, praising him and asking him for more just like that. Now, with these type of nuggets, I like to climb up high for a bigger perspective to look out and see how this affects other areas of my life. Be patient, ride it out, and celebrate the good, asking for more of the same. Yes, that is definitely something I can work with. How about you? So many times we stay perched on the negative, waiting for the other shoe to drop. We listen to negative banter and sensational headlines and tragedy after tragedy, and our perception is everything is falling apart. So why bother? We are back in the darkness. But looking for the good, waiting out the storm instead of being overtaken by it, and celebrating the things going right adds in the light. A slight shift of perspective can open up a whole new world. Now, we all know this to be fact. You can't turn on the news without hearing the bad and feeling worse. It's a commonly accepted practice today. But besides the immediate shift in your overall well-being, could there be a longer-term effect with this kind of focus? Elena Malaktos shares her insight in an article reviewed by the Scientific Advisory Board, The Effects of Media on Memory, posted on Psych Central. Our access and exposure to media dramatically increased over the last decade, specifically in terms of quantity and availability widespread. Wouldn't you agree with that? This has had widespread implications for different aspects of human life. Media engagement impacts how we form relationships with strangers to how we experience life as a whole. One such impact, perhaps less commonly discussed, is media's effect on human memory and how this affects the way we recall history. Ironically, the overall effect of media documentation on memory is more detrimental than beneficial. While one might assume that more documentation, communication, and modes of delivery would improve memory for historical events, the literature suggests that media affects the content of memories, the recollection of memories, and the capacity of memory, ultimately influencing the way we remember history. The content of our memories is central to our human existence. Without our memories, we function untethered to our personal and cultural histories, leaving us without a foundation to carry out our lives. Our memories represent the backbone of our personalities and the framework for how we approach new experiences and make decisions about the future. Without memory, most of us would not survive, given that we rely on past learning to make critical decisions for our current actions. Modern-day memory is exposed to new challenges with the influx of media exposure, which has important implications for what we can remember. Media modifies not only what we remember, but how we remember. For example, a news report, tweet, or Facebook post that includes false information can impact what the reader recalls about the event. This idea is supported by studies showing that introducing misleading or false information about an event can lead to an inaccurate recollection. Along the same lines, the use of strong or sensationalized language can influence what details are remembered about an event, such as whether something or someone was present. When headlines that use strong verbiage are widely broadcasted, there is a risk for memory distortion if the information is exaggerated. It turns out that the format with which sensationalized language is presented also influences the believability of the information. One study found that stories reported via newspapers were more likely to be believed than when televised, highlighting the importance that written press take care to not embellish stories. It's possible that the long-time existence of newspapers as a means to convey news may make them more credible than the newer modalities such as Twitter or Facebook. Social media also poses a threat to memory, specifically in the formation of memories. One way to understand social media's effect is through the illusory truth effect, whereby people tend to rate familiar statements as more true than new statements. This is especially pertinent to fake news. According to illusory truth effect, when information is presented over and over again on social media platforms, it's more likely to be deemed true. A person's memory of the source for where they learned information is also affected by familiarity. According to one study, people attributed more familiar information as coming from a credible source, highlighting the feasibility of transmitting false information when illegitimate news sources repeatedly present false stories and facts on wide-reaching platforms like Facebook or Twitter. Media not only affects our ability to recall events clearly, it also impacts our memory capacity by removing the burden of remembering from our brains and serving as the brain's external hard drive. Don't you find this true? It's like I can't even remember a number from tab to tab. I just don't store it anymore. With the advent of Wikipedia, internal memories for events are no longer necessary. We only need to recall where and how to find information about an event rather than the event itself. Researchers refer to this decreased dependency on internal memory storage as the Google effect. How many times do you say that? Just Google it. Don't know? I don't even want to think about it. Let's just Google it. Studies show that people who expect to have access to readily available information tend to forget it. People show better memory for where to locate the information than the actual information itself. A recent study demonstrated engaging in social media during an event or any form of externalization of their experience of an event decreased memory of the experience. You know what I mean? Everybody thinks they're a multitasker, they're doing something, they're at an event, they're texting or checking their social media. Before you know it, you ask them some details and they're clueless. In fact, this effect was observed when people were asked to take photos or notes about the experiences, but not when participants were asked to reflect on those experiences. It's likely that our generation and subsequent generations will not remember historical events as vividly or as accurately as previous generations, given our frequent documentation of major events. Most importantly, we rely on external sources like Facebook and Instagram to remember significant events, placing great responsibility upon us to become accurate recorders of historical events. How many of us has just stopped keeping scrapbooks or printing pictures? Don't we all think, well, it's all on my Facebook profile? Whew, what if that went away? But sadly, not only do we have diminished capacity for recall, we are influenced by how news is presented and from where the news is sourced. Such susceptibility to news manipulation through language and repetition, together with reliance on others to experience and document history, increases our risks for accepting false narratives and inaccurate accounts of history. It's all about awareness. You can't make a shift if you aren't aware there's a need to do so. Remember, you are in charge of what you let in and what you let take root and what you deliver to others as a result. So be responsible. What if we concentrated on only sharing the good? Now, don't get me wrong, everyone needs an accountability partner or a safe, trusting inner circle like a support group or close friends. But for this experiment, I'm referring to what we speak to the world. What if your water cooler story was about something funny or heartwarming? What if your social posts were uplifting and encouraging? What if you chose to turn the other cheek and not engage when something rubbed you the wrong way? Dr. Holly Parker, a lecturer at Harvard University and a psychologist in private practice, gives a new perspective on sharing in an article for Psychology Today, The Art and Science of Celebrating the Good Times. When it comes to the jolly stuff of life, we humans love talking about it, even if it's with just one other person. On anywhere from 60 to 80% of our days, we mention a positive moment to someone else. Just think about a time when something really cool happened. You got wonderful news, or you simply experienced a pleasant point in your day. If you're like most folks, one of the first thoughts was something along the lines of, I can't wait to tell so-and-so, right? You fill in the blank. And in all likelihood, you shared your news with a person you believed would celebrate your happy tidings with you, someone who would be delighted with you and for you. When that happens, you're doing something called capitalization, which is when people share joyful news and pleasant moments, even small ones, with others. But like so many facets of human interaction, the impact isn't a one-way street. Capitalization is connected to meaningful benefits for both individuals and the relationships they share. So here are some of the perks, individual perks. Capitalization allows us to relish the feelings that arise from wonderful, significant turn of events or simply amusing moments. For example, have you ever told someone about a funny incident that happened and that person was laughing and really amused by your story? I'm sure you were in high spirits and laughing too, reliving the experience over and over again. You enjoyed the gift of sharing happy news. Capitalization enhances how much meaning and weightiness we attach to those uplifting moments in our lives, and this is even more so when the person we're telling is engaged and earnestly happy for us. The positivity of capitalizing seems to extend to more facets of life, like work. When people let their partner in on rewarding moments that happened at work, they're more content with their job that day. But let's not overlook the person on the receiving end of the pleasant information. In one study, individuals learned to not only catch times when someone shared good news or uplifting moments with them, but also to react in an interested animated way. And when they put what they learned into practice, they felt happier, particularly if they did it more often and responded in an honest and real way. There's also relationship advantages. Capitalization is connected to stronger, closer relationships in a host of ways. For those who reach out and share happy moments, capitalizing is linked to relationship wellness, bonding, and safety. And when they sense that the person they're telling is receptive and engaged, they feel happier in the relationship, along with heightened fondness, gratitude, and dedication. A sincere, excited response can also elevate our confidence in the individual we're opening up to, along with our desire to be considerate and helpful towards that person. When we know our loved one is capable of rejoicing with us and being there for us amid the happy news of our life, we're also more likely to see them as a steadfast source of comfort in times of stress. On the flip side, what about people who are also on the receiving end of someone's good news or happy moment? After folks in one study received information on how to convey emotional engagement when their loved ones capitalized and how valuable it is to do that, they saw their loved one as being more appreciative and content in the relationship. It's the give-take. And there is a link between relationship benefits and the inner change that happens as partners share and react to favorable news. So how can you do this? How can you start sharing all of these positive moments and capitalizing in your relationships? Well, here are some ways. Number one, start small. If you're not usually someone who shares good news or pleasant moments, dip your toe into the water with something that feels relatively minor. It could be an amusing conversation, a show, a movie, a podcast that you enjoyed, a lovely scene in nature, a delicious meal, something funny your pet did, or new local place you visited. On the flip side, if the thought of gleefully exulting in someone's glad tidings compels you to roll your eyes, start at a place that feels more natural and still rings true. For instance, rather than conveying animated excitement, you might genuinely smile and show interest by saying something like, "That's wonderful news. Tell me all about it." Give what you'd want to get. Okay, it's that easy. When it comes to how we share good news, scientific research isn't entirely clear on what's ineffective. But some researchers have ideas about what approaches could backfire, and they seem relevant to the golden rule. If we wouldn't appreciate being on the receiving end of it, it might not go over so well with other people either, right? So if we want to get a sense of how our news might land with someone, we can consider how we would react if we were the ones hearing it, and then make adjustments where we need to. So if you want to share happy news and are unsure when, where, how, and with whom to do it, consider how you would feel if you heard the same news delivered in an identical manner in a similar circumstance. If you feel sincerely elated for the other person, then go for it. If you've had a half-hearted or icy reaction, consider what would need to be different for you to feel warm and animated. This could be changing your tone or phrasing, the setting, maybe the timing, or even the person you'd tell. And then give your new revised way a try. Take an active, constructive approach. If we want to lump our options for responding to someone's cheerful news into discrete buckets, we essentially have four main selections to choose from. What simplifies the choice is that only one of these alternatives is good for our relationships. It's called an active constructive response, and it's basically the kind of engaged, thoughtful, authentic, and lively reaction we've been talking about. For example, let's say you come home and share with your partner the wonderful news that you actually got the dream job you applied for. In response, your partner's jaw drops as they excitedly smile and hug you. And then they say something along the lines, "What? That's amazing. Congratulations. I knew you could do it. Okay, forget dinner in. We're going out." You'll rarely go astray with this approach. On the contrary, the other three options have the potential to undercut your efforts to be supportive and may dampen your connection. The first of the three is a passive constructive response. If you were to use this approach, you'd react to good news in a very muted, low-key, minimizing way. If we stick with the example of the dream job offer, your partner would react as, "Good for you, that's great." The second response could be a passive destructive response. This reaction essentially involves passing over happy news and brushing it off. In this scenario, your partner would react by saying something like, "Nice, hey, what's for dinner?" And number three is an active destructive response. This response puts a damper on cheerful tidings by highlighting the drawbacks, inconveniences, or obstacles involved. Again, let's go back to your moment of jubilation after getting a job offer you've always wanted. Here, your partner might respond by saying, "Uh-oh, here it comes. You thought you had pressure and job stress to deal with before. You're playing at a whole new level now. What if you're not able to cut it there? Would your old job take you back?" Mwah, mwah. And if right about now your mind is highlighting moments when you've used any or all of those less effective responses, I hope you'll make an extra effort to be understanding with yourself. You know, everyone trips at times when it's their turn to be responsive, and that's okay. Thankfully, in relationships, we almost always have an opportunity to do a course correction and set things right. So, as you remember, occasions when you've dropped the responsive ball, try treating them as potholes you'll have to steer clear of in the future rather than reasons to be hard on yourself. After all, past mistakes furnish some of the most invaluable lessons in relationships. And we can make use of them to create a more meaningful future for ourselves and the people that we care about. I love sharing the good. And for me, with anything, I need to make time to be intentional. I need to structure my day to work in all the things I want and need to do, from exploring and reading to learning new things and connecting with others. Life can get away from you, and before you know it, instead of paddling against the current, you're simply floating along, picking up the debris as you go. Everyone wants your attention, and not necessarily to influence you with the most positive things that will help your growth. Start to take notice of your day and where your intention lies. Break up your day because some of us tend to be more conscious in the morning, where others might be more alert at night. Get to know yourself and understand how you take in, take root, and deliver the information around you. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, if needed, shift your focus from ruminating about the past, being frustrated by the things outside of your control, are partaking in the negative narratives of the world. Instead, open yourself to receive the light of goodness, gratitude, and joy, knowing what you seek, you shall find. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges.
I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you. How I wound up here.